Here was the big moment of the investigation. The witness chair that held such underworld figures as Costello, Erickson, and Adonis would now hold an ambassador of the United States, William O'Dwyer. Questioning involved O'Dwyer's association with Frank Costello. O'Dwyer was now in the Army. The Army was investigating possible corruption with Army contracts and the garment industry.
In 1942, towards the end of the year, there were rumors that friends of Frank Costello's and possibly Frank Costello himself were interested in our Air Corps contracts. In December of that year, I sought out Costello to find out whether or not he knew the men involved in the rumors. Now, I saw Costello. I definitely saw him once at his home, and it's my best impression that I saw him twice on the same subject.
Did Moran go with you at his home?
He went the first time.
Moran is James Moran, close friend of O'Dwyer and high official in the city government. He was appointed to the city post by O'Dwyer.
What, he go to carry a bag or what? I mean, what did he go for? Is he errand boy or a companion or what? Or an advisor?
Senator, if the question is legitimate and intended to be other than sarcastic,
absolutely,
I'll be most happy to answer it. But if it's just sarcasm and character
assassination... The question is legitimate, bearing upon the importance of Mr. Moran in your official life as district attorney.
I wasn't district attorney.
Well, what of your position was then?
I was an Army officer.
All right. And he was an ex-friend of yours, wasn't he?
He was a friend of mine and still is.
Exactly. Of course, I realize that. What did he go with you for there?
And I have no hesitation in saying that I hope the senator has as many good friends as Moran has been.
Well, he's got one awfully good friend.
I am.
Later.
You've got bookmaking all over the country. They say there's a lot of it in New Hampshire, too. $30 million a year.
Well, I'd never seen it proved.
Well, it's been on the papers.
Yeah.
And they say that every New England bookmaker of any count spends their summers right in Bretton Woods in New Hampshire.
Is that so?
That's what they say, and it's written in your papers up there.
I never heard that before, sir.
Oh, well, do you want me to read it from the Manchester...
You can send it to me by special delivery mail.
I'll be glad to read it to you.
And I might say to you, sir, that I don't believe anything I see in the Manchester Union.
Well, I'll tell you...
If ever was a paper that wasn't worthy the name and an editor who was unworthy of being a journalist, it's the gentleman who runs the Manchester Union. That isn't a Bible to quote to me, sir.
Well, sir, I'll tell you. It wasn't written by the editor of the Manchester Union, Mr. Loeb, or it wasn't written...
Don't mention his name, please.
It wasn't mentioned by your recent opponent, Mr. Powell.
Don't mention his name,
it was
please.
It was written by...
Enough is enough.
It was written by Mr. Ted Williams.
Who is he?
He is a sports writer for the Telegram.
Left fielder for the Boston Americans?
I wouldn't know what he has to do with them, but I read the paper. And that's what they said. $30 million worth of bookmaking in your home state, sir.
I should put an asterisk after that. Important if true.
Well, all investigations have an objective, and that's to find out what is true.
That's right. That's why we're here.
All right, sir. So it might be a good idea to reserve judgment on any investigation until it's completed.
Well, we haven't got a Costello in New Hampshire.
I wonder.
Well, I don't at all. There's only one, and he reigns in New York.
And I wonder who the bookmakers in Bretton Woods support for public office in New Hampshire.
Well, I'll tell you one that didn't support. And he's talking to you now, and you know it.
Well, I can tell you, sir, that you don't know who supported you because you sent down here to New York for money to help you in the primaries and for money to help you in your election, and you got it, and you don't know where it came from.
I didn't send down to New York for a single dollar.
You called up.
I did not.
Well, now, would you like to go into that?
Yes, I would.
All right.
And I challenge you.
All right, is there a Mr. Rosenblatt in the room? Is there a Mr. Rosenblatt here? There was an organization down here that went out to beat Pat McCarran in Nevada. and they supported you. And the story that is circulated down here is that you call up on the long-distance telephone to get their help and that you got money.
Well, it's not true. I never called anybody from New York for contributions to my campaign.
Well, I'm under oath and you're not, sir.
Well, I'll take the oath right now, if you'll give it, Mr. Chairman. I hate a four-flusher.
All congressional investigations are not filled with drama, corruption, accusations, denials, heated arguments, and political speech-making. Some are featured by the intriguing personalities whose testimony delights and amuses legislators and public alike. One of these personalities stole the spotlight in the summer of 1958. Congress was investigating the possibilities of baseball being a monopoly and thus liable under the nation's antitrust laws. Baseball contended that our national game is a sport and not a business. One of the witnesses was the celebrated manager of the New York Yankees, Casey Stengel.
Mr. Stengel, I'm not sure that I made my question clear.
Yes, sir. Well, that's all right. I'm not sure I'm going to answer yours perfectly either.
I was asking you, sir, why it is that baseball wants this bill passed.
I would say I wouldn't know, but I would say the reason why they'd want it passed is to keep baseball going as the highest baseball sport that has gone into baseball, and from the baseball angle. I'm not going to speak of any other sport. I'm not in here to argue about other sports. I'm in the baseball business. It's been run cleaner than any baseball business that was ever put out in the 100 years at the present time. I'm not speaking about television, or I'm not speaking about the income comes into ballparks. I have to take that off. I don't know too much about that. I'd say the ballplayers have a better advancement at the present time.
Farewell, Senator Langer.
You look forward then, do you not, say 10 years from now or 20 years from now, that this business of baseball is going to grow larger and larger and larger. Isn't that right?
Well, I should think it would. I should think that it'd get larger because of the fact that we're drawing tremendous crowds, I believe, from overseas programs in television. That's one program I've always stuck up for. I think every ball player and everyone should give out anything that's overseas for the Army free of cost and so forth. I think that every hospital should get it. I think that because of the lack of parking in so many cities, that you cannot have a great ballpark if you don't have parking space. If you are aged or 45 or 50 and have acquired enough money to go to a ball game, you can't drive a car on a highway, which is very hard to do when you're after 45 to drive on any modern highway. And if you're going to have to stay home, you need radio and television to go along for receipts for the ballpark.
How many baseball players are now engaged in the activity as compared when you came in?
At that time, they didn't have as many teams. That's proper. They didn't have near as many teams below. Later on, Mr. Rickey came in and started what was known as what you'd say numerous clubs, you know, in which I'll try and pick up this college man, I'll pick up that college boy, or I'll pick up some corner lot boy. And if you picked up the corner lot boy, maybe he became just as successful as the college man, which is true. Now, he then had a number of players. Now, to own too many players is a funny thing. It costs like everything. I said, just like I made a talk not long ago, and I told them all when they was drinking and they invited me in, I said, you ought to be home. You men are not making enough money. You can't drink like that. They said, this is a holiday for the Shell Oil Company. And I said, why is it a holiday? They said, we did something great for 3 years, and we are given 2 days off for to watch the Yankees play the White Sox, but they were mostly White Sox rooters. I said, well, you're not doing right. I said, you can't take those drinks and all even on your holidays. You ought to be home and raising more children because the big league clubs now give you $100,000 for a bonus to go into baseball. And by the way, I don't happen to have any children, but I wish Mrs. Stengel and I had 8. I'd like to put them in on that bonus rule.
Senator John Carroll of Colorado enters the questioning.
This is the real question before this body.
All right.
Then what is the need for legislation if they're getting along all right?
I didn't ask for the legislation.
Now the star of the New York Yankees, Mickey Mantle.
Well, Mr. Mantle, do you have any observations with reference to the applicability of the antitrust laws to baseball?
My views are just about the same as Casey's.
Well, if you will redefine just what Casey's views were, we'd be glad to know.
In 1958, Congress investigated corruption in the Teamsters Union. They were interested in particular in the strange financial manipulations of Dave Beck, the president of the Teamsters. The charges against Beck?
I think it fair and proper to say that during the past 10 days, evidence was developed before this committee, supplemented by additional information that the committee has, that clearly indicates that from the years 1949 through the first 3 months of 1953, Mr. Beck took more than $320,000 from the Teamsters Union Treasury in Seattle.
That was Senator John McClellan of Arkansas. Dave Beck answers the charges.
I intend to assert all privileges as to anything I might say, and I have a determination not to waive or imply the waiver of any protection and privileges afforded me by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as to any question which may be propounded to me or to the production of my record.
Beck is excused. He will answer more questions later. Now to the witness stand comes Nathan Schefferman. Schefferman is a labor advisor and close friend of Dave Beck. Senator John Kennedy of Massachusetts starts the questioning.
You're removing yourself from responsibility for a lot of different actions. And it seems to me that you signed the check. Therefore, I don't think that it's correct for you to come before this committee on a matter of this importance and state that you were not aware that you were paying for these purchases for Mr. Beck.
I did not know they were union funds.
Well, Mr. Would you... perfectly proper for you to say you did not know it.
Yes.
But if the facts have since developed and you have learned that they were purchased with union funds, then there's nothing misleading about it. You did not know it at the time.
No, I did not know it.
It didn't come to your attention.
Never came to my attention.
After the goods were paid for.
Paid for it.
I understand.
Yes.
He was using you as a procuring agents.
Well,
I was
a I don't like the word procuring. Purchasing agent.
The next day, Beck was back on the stand.
Mr. Beck, we have had testimony that you took some $85,000 amongst the funds that you took.
Robert Kennedy.
From the union. With some $85,119.92 that were used through Mr. Nathan Schefferman to pay your personal bill. Could you tell us whether you did this or not?
I must decline to answer the question. Because this committee lacks jurisdiction or authority under Articles 1, 2, and 3 of the Constitution, further, I decline to answer because I refuse to give testimony against myself and invoke the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, and further, because the question is not relevant or pertinent to the investigation.
Do you feel that if you gave a truthful answer to this committee on your taking of $320,000 of union funds, that that might tend to incriminate you?
It might.
It might tend to incriminate you.
It
might. You know enough about your use or your taking of the $320,000 that if you gave a truthful explanation and answer to that, it might tend to incriminate you.
It might.
Is that right?
It might.
You feel that yourself?
It might.
I feel the same way.
Now comes the most violent explosion of this hearing. A few years before, Beck had violently opposed anybody who took the Fifth Amendment in place of answering committee questions.
Let me just outline this for you. These were professors, five or six professors, who were charged with communism, Mr. Beck. They appeared before a congressional committee and took the Fifth Amendment. The question before the Board of Regents at the time was whether they should be fired because they had taken the Fifth Amendment. And you made this statement at that time that you felt, quote, Americans who are living the American way do not have to hide behind technicalities, referring to these professors. Yes.
I subscribe 100% to what I said in that telegram or information that you have in front of you, and I emphasize again that I personally am following out advice of counsel.
No, that's not...
We concede that.
If, all right, then that's where
you're following advice of counsel. But let the chair ask you, did you make this statement?
I do not know whether I made that exact statement or not.
Do you deny you made it? Do you deny you made it?
I do not deny it because I don't know. I'd have to look at the record. I do not know whether I made that statement or not. Of course I don't.
All right, well, what position did you take on the professors generally then?
I have taken the position against professors or anyone else who advocates
I didn't answer this, Mr.
Let me answer the question now.
Just a minute.
I'm
Beck.
Trying to answer it. You interrupt me.
Well,
I don't
just
interrupt
a moment.
You.
The chair's interrupting. For a moment to get a little order. Ask the question.
Mr. Beck, I am not asking you what you generally feel about professors who advocate communism. Now, wait a minute. All I'm asking you is what position did you take on the six professors at the Washington University?
I voted against those professors.
Being retained.
Being retained.
Because they were hiding behind technicalities. Is that right?
Technicalities is a broad term that can encompass a great deal more ground than just the Fifth Amendment.
Do you know a more effective technicality to hide behind than the Fifth Amendment?
Now there is drama and humor. Senator John McClellan.
The press quoted you as saying that if you had talked, that you would have blown the lid right off of the Senate, and said that if you didn't talk, you were taking the rap in order to protect a lot of fine people that would be embarrassed if you did. Did you make a statement like that, in substance, to that effect?
I decline to answer this question on the grounds that the answer may tend to incriminate me.
Senator John McClellan asks Beck some questions about his associations.
I see a name here we've been trying to locate, a Mr. Dave Beck, Jr. Would you know him?
I must decline to answer the question.
The questioning has become a shambles. Beck is again excused. Dave Beck finally resigned, and his place as president of the Teamsters was taken by Jimmy Hoffa. Senator McClellan comments.
Corruption breeds corruption, and violence breeds violence. Like a cancer or any other malignant growth, it must be attacked at its source. And the source of the cancer in the International Brotherhood of Teamsters today obviously stems from the leadership and influence of James R. Hoffa.